A show featuring pastels, weavings made from hand-spun wools, and how to make yarn out of dog hair. Woof. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Stephen DeLuque, and welcome to a special pledge drive version of the Ears on Arts segment of Issues and Ideas, a program produced here at listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and southern Monterey counties on California's spectacular Central Coast. Today's guest is Denise Shriver, who is the proprietor of Olive Tree Gallery and Studios in Atascadero. Denise currently has a show at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, running through the end of March. Co-host Krissa Hewitt starts us off.
Stephen and I are here today with Denise Shriver in her studio in Atascadero. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming.
Our pleasure.
Hello, Denise.
So tell us a little bit about where we are right now, the studio.
We are at Olive Tree Fine Arts, and it's at 5850 Traffic Way in the old part of downtown Atascadero. And it's my studio and also a cooperative gallery. And I rent wall space, and people sit on occasion, and mostly I paint here. And I bring my dogs.
So painting, but right now you also, or not also, but you have an exhibit at SLOMA that is featuring pastels, am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. And also my art yarns and my weavings. And I was surprised when they asked me because I thought they would just want the paintings, but they also wanted the yarns and the weavings. And I weave in the Saori style, which is Japanese self-discovery through weaving. So it's all free form. And the exhibit shows how inspiration can take me into all kinds of directions. I might see something and think, well, that would make a really beautiful painting, and I paint it, and then I can see how it would look in a weaving, or just everything kind of feeds each other, and I just love all those processes.
Do you find certain things are better translated in certain mediums? I mean, I'm finding that true with a lot of the artists that I speak to that work in multimedia type of things, is the fact that they'll look at something and they'll think, like, that would make a really great sculpture as opposed to the painting. Do you mentally go through that process, or is it just pretty innate?
I think it's innate. I just feel what it'll work, and I can be painting something, and then I'll think, well, but that line would make a really nice piece in a weaving.
Well, it certainly makes sense. I mean, that crossover is something that, at least for me, since I do work in several different materials, it's always both challenging but also rewarding to understand how they interconnect, if no place else but your head. Which one came first?
Painting. Drawing and painting. I started drawing when I was probably 4.5 or 5. And weaving, I've been weaving about a year. And spinning yarn, really seriously, probably the last 3 years.
When you were a kid, was this something that you picked up because you wanted to? Did somebody say, here, and hand you a box of crayons or whatever it was going to take?
I just did it. It was just something in me that I had to do. I lived in a really rural area up by Mount Rainier in Washington. And we did not have art in school. I didn't have any art classes till I got into high school. And then they just let me do whatever I wanted, which was great because I had access to supplies and I had electives, so I would take art, as much art as I could. But it was always just something that I did. I had to do it. I just had to. I would come home from grade school and start drawing something I had seen, and
it becomes part of your vocabulary. I think that's what a lot of artists realize at a point, is that it's a way that you can communicate through no other way. It's only through the artwork, and it does become actually part of your language.
You're right. It does. And I think for me, it's like an energy that I have, and the only thing that really satisfies that is something artistic or being outside in nature or working with the animals, all of those things are really beneficial for me. And they take me to a deeper place, and it's a really creative place. And the more I do it, the more I want to do it, and the better I feel as a person.
When we arrived, you were talking about your one dog who's here, and then there are others, and talking about the different things that you do with them in relation to what you just said. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Well, I've always had dogs, and I used to ride horses a lot, and I used to train. That was my life, really. And then I picked up my art again later in life. So now I don't have horses, and I really love working with the dogs, and I do positive training, positive reinforcement, and I've taught at a couple places in this area, agility, and I have taught other classes. But I love to train. I love that rapport of working with them, and, you know, it's a lot of a mental thing, maybe not so many words sometimes, and I like that kind of connection.
And when you're sitting or standing at an easel, my hunch is there are not lots of words either.
No, exactly. It's pretty quiet. And please don't talk to me when I'm painting. All my friends know that because I get jolted out of some other place, you know, and then it's like, wait, stop. Mm-hmm. Very meditative type of process. And weaving and spinning is also very meditative. So when I'm tired from standing or been busy, you know, I split my time up with painting and being active with the dogs. And my breed, Belgian Shepherds, they need a lot of exercise. Then in the evenings, I can weave and spin where I sit, but I still feel this creative need that I have.
In picking up different medium for you to work with, how many in terms of working two-dimensionally?
Well, I started out with pencil because that's what I had growing up, and notebook paper and plain newsprint. And then I've done some watercolor, but I really love pastels. And it has the immediate satisfaction of the color, and it's tactile, it's like drawing. But I also like to oil paint. I would like to be much better than I am now at oil painting. Those are my two favorite mediums.
We've talked with another artist some about pastel, but I think it's probably one of the disciplines that's least familiar to the majority of people. They may have seen them, but, you know, having a better understanding of what sorts of things it allows you to do that painting with acrylics or with oil are not.
Well, you don't have to wait for it to dry. And for somebody as impatient as I am, that's a really good thing. And it's so immediate that you can really paint in that energetic moment when you're really inspired and you can get a lot done. And not to say that you can't do that with oils. I'm not proficient enough to do beautiful alla prima oils. I hope to be someday. But that's the thing I love about pastels.
Do you use the dry pastel or are you using oil pastel?
I use soft pastels, so those are the dry. Mm-hmm. And it's basically pigment with some binder.
And can tend to have a lot of residue around. I mean, there's stuff that doesn't adhere to the paper very well. What sorts of ways do you find that you learn to control that in terms of not making everything just a big smudge?
Well, I really like to and prefer to paint outdoors for a variety of reasons, because I'm inspired by nature. I love being outside. That's where I start my paintings. And I really prefer just to finish them in here, partly because of the dust. And I use a big filter here to take away a lot of the dust. And the paper, the supports that I use, are very grippy. So it minimizes that, and that's why I prefer to paint outside, and then the papers that I use, they grab a lot of it.
So they're almost akin to a sandpaper?
They are a sanded paper. I use Kitty Wallace sanded paper, and I use a La Carte made by Sennelier. It's a vegetable flake paper. It's more fragile, but it also, the stuff really adheres to it, and there are other new products out now, too.
What is the process of overlap color with pastel? Well, in other words, if I put down yellow and now I'm putting something over it, am I creating a blend? red and yellow making an orange, or is it covering up the yellow, or is it a matter of how you do it?
It's a matter of how you do it, and I and probably the majority of pastel artists paint from dark to light because it's very hard to paint over the light colors. And then it does depend. You can just put broken bits of color and have them read as a different color from a distance.
But it is not the same as mixing paint. You're nodding your head, shaking your head?
No, I have had limited experience with pastel, but that was part of my frustration because I am a painter. They don't act the same way. Painting, you do blend colors, and you can alter them and change them even on the canvas. And with pastel, pretty much once it's down, it's down.
The other thing that I've found interesting is that many of us, I think, have grown up with the term pastel referring to very pale, you know, soft pinks, soft blues, but that isn't usually what we're seeing.
That's correct. And another thing that a lot of people think of when they think of pastels is, you mean you paint with chalk? No, it's not chalk. There is a difference. And like I said, pastels are pigment with binder, where chalk has more in it and it's lightened up.
So what kids are drawing with on the street is definitely chalk, unless they've got really rich parents.
Exactly.
Where does a piece start for you?
It starts when I see something that moves me. I don't paint something that might be popular or that might sell. I have to have an emotional response to it. So if I paint a vineyard, it's because I saw something emotional about it.
Do you work in series, or is it pretty much individual imagery?
It's been pretty much individual, but I have started a little series of things from my property, you know, morning and evening type things.
Okay, so as you go out for the day, if you're working in nature, how are you making those discoveries most of the time?
A lot of times it's just driving, and then I'll see something that grabs me. I'll find a place to pull over. Sometimes it's my driveway. I've got a lot of paintings from the end of my driveway or the top of my driveway. I'll be coming back from dog class or something, and, oh, my gosh, it's gorgeous. You know, I got to stop right now, and I always have my stuff with me, and stop and paint.
Do you ever capture anything in photo as a memory of something?
I would say 99.9%. From location and from my own memory. I have a very good recall. The only thing that I have done from photos are those moon paintings that are at Sloma. And that was when I went to Sweden, and I used my new iPhone because the moon was coming up, and it was amazing. It was coming up, and then pretty soon it was reflecting on the water a little, and then more. And so they're not very good images, but using that and my memory, I did some paintings from that.
Whether it's at the top of your driveway, it's also the time of day and the light and everything else, so that if it was ever necessary to say, boy, the camera's here, I'll just do this as the reminder. Or
on occasion, very rare. I usually have my sketch pad there, and I'll make notes. I'm not very good at looking back at my notes.
You are tuned in to Ears on Art on listener-supported public radio KCBX. And speaking of support, please show your support by calling 549-8855 and making a pledge. Thanks to all of you who have called in to pledge. We now return to our conversation with Denise Shriver, who explains her discovery of spinning wool, which evolved into the art of weaving.
The introduction of fiber, how did that come about?
There's never a short story with me. I started raising English Angora rabbits. And, you know, you pluck, or I sheared them for the fiber. And so they have beautiful fiber, and I thought, I have to do something with it. So I went and bought myself a spinning wheel and taught myself to spin. You know, one thing leads to another, and pretty soon I have all this yarn. So I'm going to do something with it. I don't like to knit, really. So I started weaving. And that's pretty much it. It's taken on a life of its own.
Then the connection with the painting and the weaving?
I can see something that inspires me. And when I start to spin often now, I will pick colors out of my huge stash of fiber. And I'll think, well, you know, that light in the winter on that sunrise, it was particularly this or that. And I'll start to spin some of the yarns in planning my weaving because I can see how they will be. I'll spin maybe ground colors and then sky colors and take it into a weaving.
I think you gave a definition or a term at the beginning. Was it about the type of weaving or the type of spinning? I don't remember which. And can you tell me more about what that meant?
It's saori, which is Japanese, and it means self-discovery through weaving. No mistakes. And you learn about yourself, and it's centering, and you're creative. And it's a process that they use there for also developmentally disabled or handicapped people. The looms are made and designed so somebody can come up in a wheelchair and use them. They're very easy. And so anybody can create beautiful things. And I think the main thing is that there's no mistakes is what it's called. It's not really structured. So you can create whatever you want, and anybody can do it. And I find that when I'm weaving, I'm looking at that just like painting. Like I'll put something in and I think about it for a minute, or I don't really step back when I'm weaving, but the essence of stepping right back. And then I'll, oh, okay, and I'll do this. And so rather than a structure where if I was reading a draft, I would, you know, throw every pick. I'd know what I was doing exactly. This is different. And it's really satisfying.
When you're in a discipline that has, on many angles, a lot of structure to it, do you find that you're having to explain this a lot to people? What are you finding in the weaving world as you push into this?
I'm not really sure because I've just been so nose down to the grindstone working on it. I put myself out there and put my weavings out there, and I'm really honored that Sloma wanted them. And they are very different than the traditional weaving, and we have some excellent weavers in this area and in the guild that I'm in. I'm not really sure what anybody thinks about it, but I'm happy doing it, and I'm just going to keep doing that as well as learn more traditional and structured weaving.
In our last week's program, we were talking with a metalsmith who has spent the last 30 years really exploring, especially with copper, how he can fold it, hammer it, bend it, unfold it, and, you know, do all sorts of, you know, really interesting forms. And that the person or the people that he studied with, especially in Germany, were working on a whole concept that when you make a mark, you have made a design decision, as opposed to us more conventional metalsmiths who make marks and then spend time taking them away so that we get a refined surface. So I'm sort of making that equation in terms of what some people might call right ways and wrong ways to do things, and other people are saying, no, it's just a different way.
It is a different way. It doesn't mean that I don't take things out that I'm not happy with, or that I would like maybe my selvage, my edge, to be a little bit straighter. But it does mean that I'm free to explore, and I'm not locked into any absolute structure. I'm making my own.
And as one who learned a craft in the much more conventional method, it's always a challenge to find ways to say, I can allow myself to do this.
It's not to say that I am not wasn't nervous about this initially. At our guild sale, the first time I really put any weavings in, they were completely different than what is typically at the guild. And I was really nervous about it with my peers or with the other weavers. I think they all know that I'm an artist and they expect that. I'm really happy doing what I'm doing, and I like the exhibit that I have. I think it shows a variety of different thought forms and processes that happen while I weave.
For you now, as you are moving back and forth between these disciplines, do you envision combining them in different ways?
They'll be their own separate entities and ways that I express myself. I don't have any thoughts of combining them. I do put my art yarns in my weavings, but the paintings and weavings and the fiber textiles are separate. If I was a collage artist, That would be a different story. I would totally use them.
I believe with your breed of dog, the hair is too short to spin.
You just read my mind because I was going to talk about this. My very second shawl that I ever made was out of dog hair. It was out of Belgian fur, so it's not too short. They have a double coat. They have an undercoat. It's quite soft. And I asked for people from my Belgian list to send me dog hair, and I would spin it, and then somebody could make something out of it for a rescue and raise money, raffle it off. What turned out happening is that I share a birthday with a breeder up in Washington State. Last year, I felt really compelled to make something and send it over to the Nationals. So I spun up all this donated hair, and I wove a shawl. It's like my second shawl. And I sent it off, and they auctioned it off for $700. And all that money went to rescue. So it makes a beautiful fabric.
To your knowledge, are there many dogs that have hair that is suitable for spinning?
Great Pyrenees, it's fabulous. White, it's got a beautiful halo. Any breed that has an undercoat. Pomeranian, Belgian Shepherds, Collies, Shelties. There are people that have that as a business. They spin dog hair.
Whole new option.
So it's too warm here to wear something completely made out of dog hair. We call it shengora when it's yarn made from dog hair. But a trim would be really outstanding.
You've talked about making a whole piece with it. Are you incorporating it much with other yarns when you're doing your other weaving?
I haven't yet. And the one that I did, I also had hand-spun silks. The ones that I have now at Sloma, they don't have any dog hair. But I do, on occasion, add that to something along with the hand-spun silk. And it's beautiful because it's fuzzy. It's like angora.
We started off talking about your gallery here. So how many artists are here?
I currently have probably 15 artists. We do monthly events usually or every other month. I feature an artist. The little town has art and wine tours. We have one coming up March 22nd. I'm on my third year being here now.
It's nice and open. It's very airy. These artists are all from this county pretty much, or do you have people from elsewhere?
I have one artist from Asilomar, up in Monterey County, and the rest are local. We have a lot of talent in this area.
Is that a jewelry case that I see down there? So you're displaying more than paintings.
We have jewelry. I also have my organic olive oil here. And you can taste it and buy it here. We have some books and cards and prints and a lot of paintings, a lot of good paintings and photography.
Are you making your own olive oil?
Yes. My husband and I planted 3,000 arbequina trees. We're certified organic. And we're part owner of a portable olive oil mill, Mill on Wheels. And so we have arbequina, it's a Spanish varietal olive, and we produce olive oil.
Because she had nothing else to do with her time.
Sleep? Who wants to sleep anyway?
So you sell that here? Do you market it elsewhere?
Yes, it's also for sale at Nature's Touch Nursery Harvest in Templeton and online. Our name is Kite Hawk Farm.
Okay, so we have two-dimensional work. We have olive oil. We have dogs that we take care of. We have spinning and weaving. What's next?
I'm getting older. I don't really want to do too many more things. This is good. Unless I should try jewelry making.
Anytime.
I'll give you a call.
No, I just think this has been fascinating. I've never even thought about spinning dog hair to make yarn out of it, and I've learned an incredible amount just listening to you.
I realized the other night, the now almost 14 years of doing this program has really been, I described it to someone as just an incredible graduate seminar. It's technique, but as much as that, it's just the beauty of hearing how creative people think and do.
Well, I think it must be very enlightening and fun, and if you need an assistant, call me. I'd love to go out on some interviews with you. This is great.
Anything that we've left out?
I lived in Germany for a while. When I came down here to California, I worked for a really well-known horse person, and that it was a school, and that broke up. And so then I went to Germany to visit, and I stayed there for about 8 years and worked on a really large Polish-Arabian breeding farm. and, of course, was really, really involved with horses. And then I came back to this area rather than going back up to Washington. I loved the Central Coast, and I came back here in late 1987 because I like the culture here. I love country. I have never lived in town and hopefully never will. But I also like the culture. It seemed a little more aware than where I grew up. And I really like that about this area. I love the way it looks. I love the landscape. And I really love the people.
And certainly since landscape seems to be one of the sources of inspiration, then it would obviously be important to be someplace that, as you say, inspires you and motivates you to grab that image.
Well, yes, and painting in pastels, it's the climate here is a lot better than trying to paint in Washington State all the time in the rain on location. So it's perfect. And if it does rain, I have my Sprinter van. I can stand up in it and open the door and paint.
Well, Denise, thank you so much for giving us your time, and we will be letting people know about the exhibit that's at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art through
the month of March.
Thank you, Denise. As I said, this has been most enlightening. I've crossed into a new realm that I never thought I would ever go to. Now I'm thinking, okay, what other animals can you make yarn from?
Long-haired cat. So thank you both. Thank you both very much. It's really been a lot of fun.
You're most welcome.
Co-host Krista Hewitt and I would like to thank Denise Shriver for taking time out of her busy schedule to speak with us. Denise has a show at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art through the end of March. For more information on the museum's hours of operation, visit sloma.org. Denise also has a website at denisescriver.com, where you can also get information on her organic olive oil. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a segment of Issues and Ideas, produced here at the studios of listener-supported public radio KCBX in San Luis Obispo. My name is Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host Krista Hewitt, thank you so very much for listening, and a great big thank you for all of those of you who have pledged your support.